We're doing Shofetim, and we had learned about our first judges. We had learned how the Jewish people had leftovers. We had leftover nations in our midst. And we learned about Otniel ben Kenaz. And then we learned about Ehud ben Gera, Ehud who was a cripple with his right hand, and how he killed Eglon. And then we learned, in short, the story of Ruth, because chronologically this is when it occurred. And then we learned about Shamgar ben Anat, who we don't know much about. We know that he killed many Philistines with 600 Philistines with one piece of wood. And now we are up to the period of Devorah. And in the time of Joshua, in the time of Yoshua, there was a Canaanite king named Yavin. And he ruled over the territory called Chatzor. And when Yoshua conquered the territory of Chatzor, for some reason, Yoshua left this king alive. He let him live. And this king went to the territory, the area called Charoshet Agoyim, a place where they had quarries of metal, and he established his little army there. And now, decades later, this king is coming back to haunt us, this king Yavin, and he has a chief general named Sisera, who we discussed last week, is a brilliant chief general. And because they're situated in an area where there are quarries, where they could, it's called quarries, or where you take out metal. Quarries of metal. They have 900 metal chariots, and they oppress the Jewish people. For 20 years, they have the upper hand. Yeah?
How is it possible that the guy
had a Roman name?
Sisera.
Sisera? I don't know. Good question. This is pre-Roman time, so I don't know. Okay, it's Sisera. I don't know. Maybe this is where they took it from. I don't know. Now they have 900 metal chariots, and they're oppressing the Jews powerfully for 20 years. And there is an exceptionally righteous woman named Devorah. And she's a woman who's an Eishes Chayil. She's very swift in performance of mitzvot. And because she's so swift, so she's attained the great knowledge of Torah. And she's really the leader of the Jewish people at this time. Here we have a woman who's mastered Torah. She's a female prophetess. And she's leading the Jewish people. Her name is Devorah. Devorah, like a bee. And she had a palm tree. Devorah in Hebrew is a bee. So Devorah, that's her name. And she was always situated under the palm tree where the Jews would come up to her and she'd judge them righteously. And God gave her prophecy and told her to go to the chief general Barak and tell him to gather 10,000 men from the tribes of Naphtali and Zvolun, which live near the mountain of Tabor. And over there, they're going to have war with Sisera. So she tells Barak, gather 10,000 soldiers to the mountain of Tabor. And then Sisera will come to the Kishon Valley, and over there you will conquer him. Barak tells her, if you come with me, I'll initiate this war, because the people are very scared of going to war against Sisera. If you, Devorah, the prophetess, come with me, I'll go. So Devorah tells him, I'll come with you. But you have to understand, I see in prophecy that the war will ultimately be won by a woman. Sisera is going to be overtaken by a woman. So the only pride that you could have in this war, as general, is that against all odds, you led the Jewish people to war. Even though everyone was scared of going to war, you said, no, we're going to war. You listened to the prophetess. If you're telling me to come with you, then there's going to be no glory left for you in this war. But fine, if that's what you want, Devorah goes with Barak. And Barak gathers from the tribe of Zvulun and Naphtali. And we will read the story the way the Navi tells us the story. The way the Navi tells us the story, we hear part of the story now. And then when after the war, Devorah sings her song, we fill in gaps to the story that we don't know right now. So we'll learn it the way the Navi presents it. And they gather on top of the mountain of Tabor. Sisera hears that Barak has gathered an army on the mountain of Tabor. So Sisera isn't scared, even though when you fight an uphill battle, you have the lower hand. He's not scared. He gathers his chariots, the 900 chariots of metal. And he gathers such a huge army that says they encompassed a few cities from Charoshes Agoyim till the Kishon Valley. Their army amassed a huge territory their army covered. And Dvorah tells Barak, God said you're going to win the war now. God is leading the way to win the war. Don't wait up here on the mountain. Go down to the valley and fight him. So even though Barak had a strategic advantage by staying on the mountain and waiting for Sisera to come up the mountain, and Sisera felt he would be victorious even on the ascent going up the mountain, nonetheless, the prophetess told him, go down and fight Sisera. So Barak leads his 10,000 men down from the mountain of Tavor, and he attacks Sisera. And God stuns the armies of Sisera, and they lose. And Sisera sees that they're being destroyed. So Sisera gets off the chariots and starts running by foot. He figures, if I'm on the chariots, they know the chariots represent Sisera's men. So if I'm on foot, that way I'll get away. And he's successful. And Barak is chasing after the chariots. And they destroy the whole camp of Sisera. They wipe out everyone. No one left but Sisera. And Sisera has run by foot to the mountain of Ya'el, to the tent of Ya'el. And Ya'el is the wife of one of Yisro's grandchildren. You remember Yisro's offsprings came to live among the Jews. And her clan specifically had lived near where Sisera was camped. And there was peace between Yavin, this former Canaanite king, and this clan from the family of Yisro. The Druze claim they're from Yisrael. We discussed last class that there are different references in Tanakh that seem to indicate that Yisrael's offsprings were Jewish. And then there are some sources that seem to indicate they were not Jewish, this being one of them. Why was there peace between them and Yavin? If the rest of the Jews are being oppressed, how come they have such a peaceful relationship? And Sisera is hesitant. He's standing near the tent. Yael comes out towards Sisera. And a little bit of background on Yael, which again indicates that Yael was Jewish. In Devorah's song, she will refer to the period that preceded her as the period which was under the leadership of Shamgar ben Anat. He's the one who beat up 600 Philistines with one piece of wood. And Yael. So she refers to it as the period that Shamgar ben Anat and Yael were leading the Jewish people, which seems to indicate that she was Jewish, which seems to indicate that she was one of the leaders. So now Yael comes out of the tent and greets Sisera and says, come here, my master, come, don't worry. And Sisera comes to her tent. She covers him with a blanket and he asks for some water. He is thirsty. And she wants to get him drowsy. He's tired after a long war. So she brings him a flask of milk. And we know that milk has serotonin. Milk helps a person fall asleep. And she gives him to drink milk. And he tells her, go stand by the entrance of the tent. If anyone comes by and asks you, is there anyone here? Tell them that not. She covers him under the blanket. And then she takes the spoke of the tent and the hammer. And she comes close to him and places the spoke over his temple and bangs down with the hammer. And through the temples, he's dead. Barak, the general, has been chasing after Sisera, and Yael comes out to greet him, and she says, come, I'll show you the man you're seeking. He comes, and he sees Sisera falling dead with a spoke through his temple. And on that day, we began our victory over Yavin, and it took a while until finally we wiped out Yavin. This was the first war. Yavin maintained some power in the land of Israel, and that's why it was considered a mortal threat to execute Sisera. Our sages say that had Sisera made it back to Yavin, then he was such a brilliant general, he could have turned the tide against us once again. So Yael recognized that it was a threat to the Jewish people. The Gemara discusses that she seduced him. The Gemara goes into all kinds of stories that the verses don't overtly indicate, that the Gemara says she used her feminism to put him to sleep, and ultimately she killed him, and then ultimately we were able to wipe out Yavin. And now we have the famous song of Dvorah, which we read in the Haftarah of Parshas Beshalach, when we read the song of the Jewish people. So our sages instituted that we also read Haftarot. There was a time when we were persecuted by the nations. It is unclear whether this was a time that we were persecuted by a Jewish king in the time of the First Temple, or a time that we were persecuted during the Second Temple. But at some point in Jewish history, the Jews were persecuted. And at that point, our sages instituted I'm sorry, let's take a step back. When we were persecuted, whichever king it was, Jewish or non-Jewish, they forbade the reading of the Torah in the temple, in shuls, in any synagogue. And when they forbade the reading of the Torah, so our sages instituted that we read from the prophets a section that is similar to the section we would have read from the Torah. So on the week that we would read B'Shalach, our sages instituted that we read the Haftarah of the Song of Devorah, because in the parsha of B'Shalach, we have the song Az Yashir that the Jews sang upon leaving Egypt. And this song that we're about to read, our sages left the institution of reading Haftarah, even though today we have reading of the Torah. But our sages said once we instituted reading a section from the prophets every Shabbos, we leave that institution. And so today our Haftarah, nowadays, when we read Parshas B'Shalach, is this song. So Devorah, together with Barak, composed the following song for the Jewish people at that time, that the Jewish people should sing this song in praise of Hashem. We are holding what the chapters, I guess we could call them that, chapter 5. And the song goes as follows. It was a time that the Jewish people went out to war, and God avenged the vengeance of the Jewish people, and God gave the Jewish people the willpower to volunteer to go to war against all odds. And because of these two points, that God took our vengeance and gave us the strength to volunteer to go to war against all odds, we should bless Hashem. Now this point that Devorah says is a philosophical problem. The Rambam and others say that God never intervenes in our Bechira Chofshit. Part of the rules, so to speak, that God implemented in this world is that God does not interfere with what we choose. So when the Jews are leaving Egypt, God says, I can't let them go the direct route to Israel, because then they'll pass Philistine territory and there'll be war, and then they might have a change of heart and say, let's go back to Egypt. They can't handle war now. Why didn't God just make us bold and brave and stand up to the war? Because God doesn't interfere with our own b'chira chofshit, our choice of whether we'll be bold or we won't be bold, etc. So this concept over here, according to some, Devorah is saying the opposite of this concept. Devorah is saying that God gave them the willpower to volunteer to go to war against all odds, against Sisera and his chariots. Now, Devorah calls out and says, listen, kings, listen to the victory of the Jewish people, listen, advisors, so that you will learn your lesson and be scared of starting up with the Jewish people. My portion, the portion of my people, is the portion of God, and therefore I will sing to Him, for He is the one that rescued the Jewish people from their enemies. God, when you went out ahead of the Jewish people were passing by Seir. They were passing by the mountain of Edom territory, and that is when we encounter the first territorial victory of the Jewish people, when we're approaching the land of Israel, and Moshe leads us to war against Sihon and Og. Now Sihon and Og were two giants, and they were two powerful kings. All the kings of Canaan used to pay them taxes and tell them, you protect us. The Jews, we heard they're on the way to Israel. You too are the two kingdoms that are on the eastern side of the Jordan. When the Jews come, you have to destroy them. We have on tradition that Og was a giant, that he lifted a mountain the size of the whole Jewish people, and he was ready to drop it on them. And Og had a massive army, and he had giants within his army, and naturally we shouldn't have won the war. The Pasuk says that when Sihon and Og came to attack us, Moshe himself was scared. God has to tell Moshe, don't be scared. The Torah says, God tells Moshe, don't be scared of him. You see, he had reason to be scared. We have on tradition that Moshe was 20 feet high, and he had a staff that was 20 feet high, and he jumped 20 feet in the air, and he stuck the staff into the ankle of Og Melech HaBashan. So that's a medrash. But now Devorah is saying, God, when you led the Jewish people to their first territorial victory against Sihon and Og, when you were marching before them, the whole earth trembled. All the nations of the ground trembled, and the angels in heaven that represent the nations started dripping sweat. The mountains, out of fear, started dripping sweat for fear of God, who was leading the Jewish people, just as Sinai, when God came to descend upon him, also trembled in fear. In the days of Shamgar and Yael, when they were the leaders before Dvorah, so Dvorah says, then people had to stop going the direct paths. People were scared of the enemies. People had to go in roundabout, Kvish Okef. They had to take roundabout routes for fear of the enemies who were bending and attacking. All the cities that weren't fortified, the Jews had to leave those cities. Until I arose, Dvorah. Until I arose, and I am like a mother who tells her kid, no, don't do that. You got to behave differently. So too I led the Jewish people and taught them how to return to do tshuva, to return to the ways of Hashem. When the Jewish people chose new gods, that's when they had a problem that wars came to their fronts. If you look back to the time when Joshua attacked the city of Jericho, they didn't have shields, they didn't have spears. They had 40,000 men who surrounded the city of Jericho in prayer and conquered the city without weapons, because the weapons aren't what win the wars for Israel. My heart goes out, says Dvorah, and my heart goes out to the leaders of the Jewish people who volunteered to go to war, and I invite them to join me in blessing God. I invite the nobles, those that ride on white mules, the important people, the judges, the businessmen, everyone should recount how when they were going to draw water, the enemies would shoot sniper fire at them. They wouldn't let them even go draw water out of the city without shooting arrows at them, trying to kill them. And now that they could go peacefully to draw their water, so they should remember that not long ago they were being shot at, and they should recount the kindness that God did with Israel, that now you could all go back to your cities that are unfortified, go back to your gates. Arise, arise, Dvorah, she calls to herself, arise with your song, and Barak, you arise to conquer your enemy. And now, as the song gets stronger, so too the victory of the Jewish people will get stronger to conquer the enemies. And now Dvorah is going to recount what happened during this war, and we're going to get more input as to what really happened during the war. And Dvorah says, arise, the tribe of Ephraim, whose root is Yoshua. Yoshua led the first war against Amalek, and here she prophesies that in the future Binyamin will conclude the war with Amalek, because Shaul was supposed to be the Messiah. Shaul was supposed to fight the conclusive war with Amalek, and Shaul would have been Mashiach ben Yosef, and David would have been Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben Yehuda. That's what should have happened. So she's prophesizing that the war against Amalek began with Ephraim, it should end with Binyamin, and she says, in this war, we had help from Machir, from the eastern side of the Jordan. We have the famous family of Machir ben Menasheh, that their leaders came down to help us in the war. Remember, which two tribes were invited to war? Zvulun and Naphtali. It was in their territory that Sisera was situated. Only 10,000 men were supposed to come to war. When the war began, the Jews on the eastern side of the Jordan heard, and one family, the nobles of Machir, they came to help us in the war. The people of Yisachar, they too came to war, even though they didn't know how to pick up a sword. You ever play baseball with a guy that doesn't know how to hold a bat? So those were the tribe of Yisachar. They spend all their days learning. And nonetheless, they heard that God said, we go to war. They said, okay, we're going to war. Our success or lack thereof is not contingent upon our knowledge of fighting the war. And then Dvorah says, but the one we have to wonder about is the tribe of Reuven. Because Reuven, when we entered the land of Israel, the tribe of Reuven said, we'll stay on the eastern side of the Jordan. So that means they said we could take on any enemies, because they were separated from the rest of Israel. So how come when there was this war, the tribe of Reuven didn't come and help us out? She says, what are they going to say? They're scared of war? If they're so scared of war, why'd they choose to live separate from the rest of the people of Israel? Why is it, you tribe of Reuven, that you stayed in your territory to listen to your flocks, to listen to the sound of your flocks? We really have to delve into the heart of Reuven to understand this tribe that did not come to join us, and she is going to rebuke them. She's starting out and saying, wait a second, I don't understand you, Reuven. Why didn't you come? Is it because you're scared of war? You're not scared of war. You chose to live in a place that you're the first tribe that gets attacked if nations attack us. What will you tell me? You're on that side of the Jordan. What about Gilad? The part of Gilad, they were far from the war. And nonetheless, they came to help us out. The tribe of Dan. I also have a question to you. Why did you take all your wealth and put it on the ships? Dan is all the way to the north. They live near Jaffa. They live near the the port cities. And when war broke out, Dan and Reuven said, we don't know who's going to win. So Reuven was ready to protect their territory. They weren't going to come help. But she's starting off asking questions. And Dan, they said, we have ships. They put all their wealth on their ships. And they figured if the Jews lose, we hop on the ships and we set sail. We'll go find a new place to live. So she asked Dan, why were you ready to live on your ships? Asher, look at the tribe of Asher. They lived on the port city. And they stayed because they said if we join the war, then the land of Israel is vulnerable to attack. So the tribe of Asher, I understand, but you Dan, what's your excuse? Zevulun, they risked their lives to win the war. Naphtali risked their lives. Look at you tribes of Israel. When Yavin attacked us, other kings volunteered to join the war against the Jewish people. They had nothing to do with this war. And neighboring Gentile kings joined the war for free. What about you? They're your brethren who were suffering at war. Where were you? You didn't come. But God took His army, the army of the stars, and they fought against Sisera. Now this can be understood allegorically as part of the song. Our sages have on tradition that God made it that the stars in heaven shone especially hot. And because they were shining so hot, the people dressed in all their metal armor were broiling in the sun. And they went into the Kishon River, which is usually a very shallow river. And they wanted to cool off in the river. And God made the river suddenly swell. And because they were dressed in their metal armor, the Kishon River washed them out. And that's what she says. The Kishon River, who in the past was such a docile river, I, the woman, could cross it with strength. But now God made it come with power and wipe them out and wipe out their horses, break the horses' feet. She says there's an area called Meiroz. And Meiroz is an area that was right near the war front. And they didn't come to join us. They are cursed. And when she curses them, from here we derive the laws of curse. You know that Bezdin could put in Cherem. They could place person in ostracization. We derive those laws from here, from her curse of the area of Meiroz. Why didn't they come and join the war? Yael, the wife of Hever HaKeni, she's going to be blessed by all the women in the tents, the modest women. He asked her for water, she gave him milk. Not only did she give him milk, she took out her finest silverware to give him butter so that he feels like she's treating him as an important general. She's treating him with honor. She stretched her right hand, her left hand to take the spoke, her right hand to the hammer, and she wiped out Sisera, and Sisera kneeled and fell before her, which is doesn't mean literally. His mother, Sisera's mother, is accustomed to his returning victorious from the wars. She's sitting by her window wailing, where is my son? Why is his chariot detained? Why don't I hear the footsteps of his chariots? And her wise mistresses answer her, and she says to herself, must be they're getting so much loot, they're being detained. Must be each one is grabbing Jewish women, each one has so many women to grab in the loot, and each one is grabbing so much beautiful ornaments, that's why they're being detained. That's interesting. Look at the cruelty of this woman. You'd think that a woman would care for another woman. She wouldn't even appease herself with such a thought. She wouldn't pride herself with the fact that her son is pillaging Jewish women. But no. Dvorah prophesizes and tells us that that's how she appeased herself. So you'd think such a vicious woman, her tears would have no effect in heaven. Our sages tell us that her tears had an effect in heaven. And one of the reasons, spiritually, that we blow so many blowings of the shofar, even though technically it would be enough to blow much less, so we have on tradition that our blowing of the shofar is our wailing, that in heaven balances out the wailings of Sisera's mother. So this is a Kabbalistic concept. Don't ask me what it means, because I don't know what it means. But somewhere up there, even this cruel woman, when she cries over her sons falling in battle, it moves something in heaven. And Dvorah ends the song just as her appeasement of herself was false. So too, all the enemies of Hashem should fall, and those that love Hashem should become more and more powerful like the sun as it rises. And in Dvorah's time, there was peace and quiet for 40 years. And we're concluding the fifth chapter. We're concluding with Dvorah's song. And Bezrat Hashem, next week, we'll pick up with the song, story of Midian. But I think that next week we will pause our regular Navi learning to learn the book of Jonah. And if we have time, I would also like to learn a little bit of Megillas Koheles, Ecclesiastes, which we'll read on Sukkot. So next week, Bezrat Hashem, we will pick up with the book of Yonah in preparation for Yom Kippur when we read Yonah.